ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. तत्त्वस्मृतेरपसारो नास्ति अन्याभ्यासशालिनः प्रत्युद्याभ्यासघातित्वात् बलात्तत्त्वमुपेक्षते. तत्त्वस्मृतेः अवसरः न अस्ति अन्य अभ्यासशालिनः प्रत्युत अभ्यासघातित्वात् बलात् तत्त्वम् उपेक्षते. Remember, in this section we're really talking about what the mumukshu needs to do. What type of a lifestyle, what type of a commitment needs to be there in order to gain nishta, in order to get to gain. And by nishta, sometimes we say rootedness or firmness in this knowledge. Swamiji started now using just the word clarity, because how can you be well rooted in knowledge? It's kind of an, you know, it's not bad though, because they do use for well rooted nishta. You know, to have firmness or well-rootedness in knowledge. They use in the Shastra, one of the Prakarna Granthas, they do use an example of a post in a post hole. You know, and when you put a post in a post hole, you've got to start pounding in dirt all around the edges and pounding it in until the post can't be moved. When you first stick it in there, it's not firm, it's not stable and strong. And so by pounding in dirt, it becomes so firm that you can't move it. So that's been a drishtanta, an illustration that's used for nishta. But then what do we mean by nishta, that firmness, in terms of gaining self-knowledge, to really gain firmness in this knowledge? What does that mean? It means clarity. It means that your understanding is clear, that your mind is free from doubt. Some have said, you know, The mind, when it's the first person starts first being exposed to this knowledge, and you gain a little piece of clarity, mind gains a little piece of clarity, something makes sense, you see it, right? But then as the mind sees that, it'll move like just the smallest amount and hit a boulder, the boulder of a doubt, right? And then it'll have to gain clarity around that particular question that comes up, around that there's vagueness, right? And so each little point of vagueness sometimes is likened to a boulder or an obstruction for the mind. Somebody who has, when the clarity is there, the nishta is there, then the mind moves like the wind, right? There are no boulders, there's no vagueness there, because you have clarity, you have depth of clarity around exactly what the vision is that the Upanishad with the Vedanta is unfolding. So levels and levels and levels of clarity, so your mind doesn't get lost in doubt and vagueness. So that's jnana nishta. So now for the mumukshu, the one who, the jignyasu, the mumukshu is the one who desires this knowledge, who wants liberation. The jignyasu is the one who's understood that desire for liberation actually has to be a desire for knowledge. There's a conversion that takes place. It's usually the responsibility of the teacher to make sure that conversion does take place. I recognize my bondage, I want to be liberated, you know, to recognizing that I need to know myself. So that desire to be liberated converts into the desire to know. And that conversion really takes some an unfoldment on the part of the teacher to see why that is so. What it amounts to is that yourself is not already free. If your being is not already full and complete, then there is no liberation for you. Because if you're not already free, liberated and turned free from time, free from space, where you're, the fullness of your being is independent of time, independent of space. If it isn't, then the truth of your experience is that you are bound by change, and all of your experiences are, including your ananda, your happiness, your sorrow, your birth, and your death. All of these things are time-bound, which is exactly what we're suffering from. And so there won't be any liberation from that if, in fact, your being is something that is existing. The truth of your being is something that is bound by time and space. So liberation becomes a non-option. So the teacher has to make you see that problem. And once that problem is understood, then it's not a question, you know, of doing something to become liberated. It's a question of removing the ignorance that allows you to think that you're bound. So knowledge has to take place. That means this desire to become, to gain liberation, to do something to become liberated, has to be converted into the desire to know myself, to know the truth of my being. Now, once that conversion takes place, then now we are no longer bound, or we're not only not bound by to doing something, there is in fact nothing to do in order to solve this problem. You can do something to, you can do something to something that exists within time and space. I mean, you can clean it, you can move it, you can shine it, you can do all kinds of things, you can purify it, all of these things. But you're doing all of these activities on things that are themselves subject to decay, subject to death, subject to change. And so no matter how hard you try, time is against you. You know, it's just like how hard we try, and we should, to really take care of this body and to make it healthy and vibrant. We should do that. It's dharma, in fact, to do that. But you're running a race against time, because as you're working away at it, trying to make it healthy, you're getting old. It's just how it is. No matter, that's the nature of the beast. It's the same with the mind. If we went over some of this last week, the mind needs continual maintenance. It needs to be tended. It is important in terms of the ananda or the shanti that's enjoyed in the mind, that you behave properly, that you live within a world, a dharmic world, in terms of your attitude. You know, if you want to have shanti, you need to behave in a way that is dharmic. Otherwise, the mind will rise up against you. You know, if you're, it's kind of like Jung has once said, you know, the world gives back to you, the face that you present to the world is the face that it gives back to you. And I think we all kind of find that to be true. It's also internally true. The face I give to my unconscious or to my psyche is the face it gives back to me. So that's important to understand too. If I don't have sort of kindness or compassion, or some sort of understanding or maturity, like being a good teacher, a swami, to my unconscious or to my own psyche, whatever I'm giving it to it, whatever meanness or critical nature, criticism I'm giving to it, it is going to respond in kind. Right? And so so what does this mean? It means that I have a lot of work to do and you can't rest. Because you are eternally a maintenance person. You have to maintain. And so there's no liberation there. It's all time-bound. Right? The mind is not going to sit still for you. It's not its nature. So this is all existed within samsara. So the question is, when the guru, when the disciple, the sisha, comes to the teacher, the question, all of these Upanishads will have some sort of a question to the teacher, and it will always be something around, who am I? Is there anything about me that survives death? Is there anything about me that is free from time? That anything that is not subject to dharma adharma, to punya to papa, and papa, is there anything about me that is free? Please teach me. So the question on the part of the sisha is very important. The sisha, the student, is asking about myself. Is, please teach me who I am, this being that is here before you. Am I this body? Am I a transmigrating individual? Do I go to heaven and then hell? Am I subject to punya and papa? Who exactly am I? Is there somebody about me that is free, that is beyond all of this? Always the sisha will come to the teacher with that, and then the teacher will teach. Now, why this is important in terms of these verses that we're going to be discussing, the mumukshu, who has been converted into a jignasu, one who recognizes the problem of liberation, it has nothing to do with doing, it has to do with knowing. Then the question is, how do I apply myself to knowing? What should I be doing in terms of my lifestyle? This is what Vidyarani is dealing with right here. What should I be doing in terms of my lifestyle, that will facilitate my gaining nishta, clarity about myself, knowledge which is free from doubt? What should I be doing? And so several verses ago, where he said, look at this just a second. He started on verse 106. Tat chintanam, tat kantanam, anyonyam, tat prabodhanam. Etat ekapadatvam cha brahma vyasa vidhu buddhaha. Those who know, those who are jnanis, the teachers, those who know, they say, what is brahma vyasa? What does it mean to practice Brahman? How do we practice Brahman? How do we practice? What's really Brahma Vyasa? How do we gain this knowledge? How do we gain that's the question. Abhyasa means to stick with something over and over and over again. You repeat something. Abhyasa, if you look at it, often means like, it just in the world, abhyasa will mean practicing something. Disciplining yourself to practice something, to become facile in something. You keep practicing it over and over and over. So here, we're not going to practice Brahman. But how do I sit in this knowledge that I'm gaining at the time of teaching in such a way that I can gain jnana-nishtha, this clarity and this vision? Because the problem that we're suffering from, it has nothing to do with action. It has to do with clarity, with removing the ignorance that is causing me to take myself to be a samsari. So how to do that? So he says, it's very simple. Tat chintanam. Think about it. Means mananam. Chintanam means use your mind. Keep your mind engaged in thinking through this so that you understand. It's manana. Contemplating on what, thinking it through, analyzing it, thinking it through what you've understood at the time of teaching. Tat kantanam. Talk about it in satsang with your peers. Kathanam. Anyonya prabodhanam. Teach each other. Teach each other. Talk to each other about it. If somebody doesn't understand it, it's your turn, you try to explain. And you let them explain to you. So that you're actually, your mind is engaged and working. Then contemplate upon it. Nididhyasana, where you sit with it and see it. Because yourself is here. It's aparoksha. It's not like yourself is somewhere else. The being, that the self that's being unfolded to you is the self that you are. And so that means that the self that you are, the being that you are, is aparoksha. It's right here, your immediate experience. Not as an object, but the self-evident presence of your own self. It's right here. And the reality of your being, in reference to this body, mind, sense organs, and the creation, right, is what the Upanishads are unfolding. And so what the Upanishads are talking about is immediately present, all of it. The Jagat is immediately present. The Atma is immediately present. Sat, being itself, is immediately present. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Immediately, aparoksha, immediately present. Chit, consciousness, immediately present. Now what we have to do is use some viveka to be able to recognize, to differentiate the immediacy and non-objectifiable nature of myself. We need to be able to differentiate it from this creation, which is not away from it, through the satya mitya. Right? I have to differentiate the non-objectifiable presence of my being from this whole creation, which is enjoying it as sat. Right? It is. It's enjoying it as the whole thing is known. But I need to be able to see my own independence. I need to be able to see I am its being and I am free from it. I need to see that. How to see that? The mind has to be available, engaged, and willing to spend time to think it through. It's unfolded at the time of teaching, right? But then your mind has to be present and continue being engaged. Shravana, manana, nididhyasana. The, what we call the upaya nishta, what is the sadhana? What is the actual sadhana for gaining this jnana? Is shravana? It means gaining the vision that the Upanishads have to give, as unfolded by the teacher. Manana is removing all of the doubts that come from your end. You know? The Upanishad, the teacher, will make clear the actual vision of the Upanishads and remove all of the doubts about what the vision that the Upanishad is actually given. That's Shravana. The teacher will take care of your manana also. But the manana is more like this. Why couldn't it be like this rather than how the Upanishads say? Right? Why couldn't it be like this? The Upanishads say this, I think it could be like this. Realizing, taking care of all of those doubts, manana. Nididhyasana, getting rid of this viparita bhavana, you know, where I recognize at the time of teaching and through manana, I recognize very clearly my own being, who I am, and the jagan mitya, the mityatva, you know, the dependent nature of this creation. I recognize it. But then I continue to feel like and behave like I'm a samsari in the body. Right? I continue habitually to behave that way. Nididhyasana gives me some time to sit with myself. Gives my mind some time to sit with the reality of myself and the mityatva of the world. And to just sit there seeing, not using a lot of words. The words have already done their job. Now I let those words, just a few words, you know, just a few words, just a mantra, you know, to point my mind, to focus my mind on what I know to be true. That's the nididhyasana. This is our sadhana, the sadhana for gaining jnanam, which is moksha, for gaining the knowledge which is moksha. The upaya nishta are all of the means for antakaran shuddhi, for purity of mind, all of our attitudes and things like that. That's why a few verses ago, because this is our topic now, what do we need to do to gain this clarity? A few verses ago, Vidyaranya said, said basically, don't get involved in studying things that are of a, there are so many, it's like this, there are so many different sciences. There's so many different sciences. There's so many different areas of study. Don't commit yourself don't engage in an area of study that is totally removed from this one. Like say you decide, well, I want, in India, from an Indian standpoint, I want to become a musician. Well, that's a 12-year commitment. Right? And it's complex. Right? And so say you're engaged in that, you know, and so that you don't have time to engage in this. That's what it amounts to. Or you decide to go into business because you want to make money or you want to accomplish something in business. Don't do that, you know. If you're doing it with the sense of, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. And they have equal weight. That's the idea. So that you split yourself. Don't split yourself like that. Because then your mind doesn't have the time. It doesn't have the freedom to commit. to the study. Why do you need the freedom to commit to the study? Because the problem has to do with ignorance. It doesn't have to do with doing. It has to do with ignorance. And how do you get rid of ignorance? Through knowing and understanding. So what if you're spending all of your time doing other things? Right? Then you're going to be splitting your attention. But then he says, you know, read the Ramayana. Read the Mahabharata. You know, do engage in studies. Like, for instance, he uses the example of the Ramayana, the Itihasas, Ramayana, Mahabharata. Because when you study them for Antakarana Shuddhi, they're full of Vedanta, and they're full of Antakarana Shuddhi. And so they're always resolving back into this vision. Yeah, study those. You know? But don't study Tarka. Don't study Sankhya. Don't study Tarka. Don't study all of these other darshanas. Because you're going to be splitting yourself. You know? So you decide. It's all right if you're an academic. We're talking about somebody who's a jignasu. If you're an academic, or you're a dilettante. I'd like to understand what Buddhism says. I want to understand what Sankhya Yoga says. I want to understand what Nyayayaki says. I mean, I teach this at school. But they're all saying. But why do you want to understand it? If you want to understand something as a Purva Paksha so that you can understand what the Upanishad is saying, that's one thing. But if you want to become, you know, a dilettante, let me have some of this and some of this and some of this and some of this so that I know what all of these are saying, you're just wasting your time. If you're a mamukshu, if you're a jignasu, if you're not a jignasu, this doesn't matter. You can study whatever you want. Do whatever you want. But if you want clarity, you have to be able to engage yourself deeply in this knowledge. That's his idea. And so he says here in this verse, he says, Tetva smritehe avasadaha na asti. There is no occasion. Avasadaha means occasion. There's no time. There's no avasara for tetva smriti. Smriti means remembering. But here he says there's no occasion for the smriti of the truth of this vision. By what he means by smriti is this. You've been, for the mumukshu, for the jignyasu, you've been exposed to this vision. So it's not now, from Vidyaranya's point of view, at this point in the text, we're not talking now about gaining the vision. We're talking about remembering it. It means contemplating on it, thinking about it, doing manana. So there is no occasion for doing manana, for doing katana, for talking about this, for thinking about it, for discussing it. There is no occasion for that. For who? Anya abhyasa shalinaha. For those people who are committed to another practice. Anya means another, abhyasa means practice. So if you are shalinaha, means your commitment is to another practice, then, I mean, life is short. There's only 24 hours in a day. And, you know, maybe 10 of those or 8 of those are spent sleeping. And then how many are spent eating, you know, and cleaning and shopping and making the money that you have to make to survive? How many hours are there in a day to be able to study? Even if you're a sadhu. Even if you're a sadhu, you still have to keep your place clean and you still have to eat and you still have to sleep. You still have to do the day-to-days. You still have to take a bath. You know, all of these things you have to do. So there's not much time. So keeping that in view for a person whose commitment is to something else, that's where their abhyasa, that's where their practice is to something else, then there isn't any time for them to be thinking about this. And then he says, pratyuta, and moreover, on the other hand, he says, abhyasa gati tvat. This tattva smriti, this contemplating on this, on the atma, on this jnanam, actually gets ruined. It gets destroyed. He says, why? He says, balat Tatvam Vimoha, he says, just from the strength of that, from the strength of that engagement, of that abhyasa, that practice and something else, this whole thing, this abhyasa, on the tattva abhyasa, it gets ruined because your mind is engaged elsewhere. And so then he says, what happens? Tattvam upekshate. It gets ruined because the truth, the tattva, is upekshate. It's neglected. Upekshate means it's neglected. It's just left behind. So what's happened then? What happened? Your mind then has re-entered samsara, and that's what you're feeding. You're feeding your mind with that engagement in samsara. And so he's saying, from the strength of that abhyasa, balat means from the strength of that, this tattva is something that's getting neglected. So he says, don't do that. Remember who he's talking to. He's talking to you. He's talking to you. If you're a jignyasu, you know, you be careful about your time. What you spend yourself, you spend yourself, are you committing to something that's just taking you deeper into deeper and deeper into samsara? Where's your commitment? We're already taken deeply into samsara just by being alive, just by being alive and maintaining our life, let alone our commitments. So that's his position. So let's do the next verse. Tame vaikam vijanita. Tame vaikam vijanita. Yanyavacho vimuchita. Yanyavacho vimuchita. Iti shrutam tatanyatra. Iti shrutam tatanyatra. Vacho viklapanam puti. Vacho viklapanam puti. Tam eva ekam vijanita. Hi anyaha vachaha vimuchita. Iti shrutam tatanyatra vachaha viglapanam puti. He's quoting here, just to back up what he's saying, a verse from the Mundaka Upanishad and a verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So the first one's from the Mundaka. He just quotes a little bit of it. Tam eva ekam vijanita. Hi anya vachaha vimuchita. What he says is, if I were to do the whole verse, which I have, the whole line, first line that I have here in this bhasha, I'm going to do the whole line because it's nicer. Tam eva ekam janata atmanam. Anya vachaha vimuchita. Amritasya esha setahu. What he says is, vijanita janata. May you know that one, tam brahman, that one alone, that alone is one. Tam stands for brahman. So here he goes like this from the previous verses. I looked at these verses earlier. Tameva ekam janata atmanam. May you know that brahman, which is one alone, that brahman, which is one alone, that brahman is the self, atmanam. Tameva ekam atmanam. May you know that. Okay. Then he says, anya vachaha vimuchita. Give up all of these other words. Anyaha vacha. All of these other disciplines. They're all words. Piles of words. All of the different shastras are just all different words. Vimuchita. Give up. Let them go. Just let them go. Right? Then he says, let them go. Amritasya esha setuhu. Why? Why let them go? Because this is the setu. This is the bridge to immortality. Bridge means, why they use bridge is because samsara is often likened to an ocean. Right? And so how do you get across this ocean of samsara? So bridge becomes like a metaphor for it. So how do I get across this ocean of samsara? How did I get to the pada, to the other side of it? How do I get to the other side of this transmigratory existence that's bound by sukha and dukkha, by suffering, by birth and death, by change? How do I get to the other side of it? It's this jnanam that's the setu for that. So don't waste your time. Don't exhaust it. So give up all of that. Give it all up. You know, getting, doing this abhyasa and all of these other disciplines for now. And so he'll say in a minute, in the next verse or so, give this up until you gain clarity. Later he'll say, after you gain clarity, do whatever you want. Enjoy. You do what you want. But you have clarity. Until you gain clarity, you have to get your mind engaged in this. So he says, so that's, that first line is from the Mundaka. Then he says, thus it is said, iti shrutam. Then he says, tata, similarly, anyatra, elsewhere in the Brihadaranyaka, he quotes another piece of the Brihadaranyaka, vachaha viglapanam priti. Vachaha viglapanam means, these words, all the words, are exhausting. Glani, the word V plus glani. This is it's causal. They exhaust you. It's a causal, viglapanam. They make you exhausted. All of these words will just wear you out. They don't refresh you or replenish you or take you to the other shore. All they do is leave you exhausted. So that's the Brihadaranyaka. And the whole verse, it says like this from the Brihadaranyaka. Na anujaya bahun shabdan. Don't spend your time anujana, thinking over, contemplating on all of these words, bahun shabdan. Don't get yourself lost in all of these words. He says, vachaha viglapanam ita, because all of those words do nothing but exhaust you. In other words, they don't bear fruit. That's the idea. You work and work and work. It's true for those of us who have studied Nyaya, because we also study Nyaya and the different darshanas, all of the different schools. You study just because Shankara in his Brahma Sutras and in his Bhashas will quote these schools because he uses them as purva pakshas, as objections, things as doubts to be answered. And so when he's quoting all of these different schools, you want to have some idea of what he's talking about so that you can study the Bhasha. But if you were to spend time, and I have spent a little time in Nyaya, in the Nyayaikas, it is like beating your head against the wall. It goes on and on and on in very, very meticulous, picayune type of arguments. Very difficult to understand, and you have, because they're not logical. They don't resolve. The arguments won't resolve. And you have to hold an edifice. Has anybody ever, you have to hold a huge edifice in your mind, and if somebody distracts you, the whole thing will crash down. Have you ever done any computer programming? No? Well, with computer, I did a little programming one time in my life. I did Pascal and some basic and stuff a long time ago. I used to kind of like it, but I would sit in front of the computer building this edifice that's all in your mind, right? It's a big program that you're building. You have to hold all of it in your mind, you know, step after step after step after step. And so this whole structure is there, and you can't quit until you come to a certain point, because if you quit, the mental structure will collapse on you.
Vanish.
Vanish, right. So you have this complex structure. Programmers, like if you ever talk to Tom or any of these guys that do programming, who really are programmers, they'll talk to you about this. You've built this whole edifice in your mind, and you have to hold it, and you have to maintain this thing. If you pull out one thing, or the phone rings or something, the whole thing collapses, and you have to work to get this whole thing back. And in the end, what do you get? This used to just make me laugh. I would spend all day getting this program written, and in the end, I would press a button on the computer, and it would run. And that was it. This little program would run. Some silly little program. And I was viglapanam. I was exhausted. My mind was exhausted. And what was the result? Was this fun little program that had nothing to do with moksha. It had nothing at all to do with moksha. Well, Nyaya, Sankhya, Yoga, say you can spend, you know, the Vaisheshikas, you can spend a lifetime in this, building structure upon structure and upon structure. And you have all of this, but what do you get out of it? Nothing. You end up with nothing. Unless you say, well, I have academic knowledge. Okay, that's all right. I have academic knowledge. I can be a teacher of Sankhya, a teacher of all of these things. I have this knowledge that I can teach. But what does it have to do with moksha? If that's what I was looking for, I don't get it. And so what do I get instead is worn out. I get this viglapanam. All of these words are just make for my own exhaustion. That's exactly what he says. It's, you know, you have to, when you're, just to help you a little bit, because I don't know if you're thinking like this or not, but if you are studying something in order to gain liberation, if that doesn't work, if you're studying the wrong thing, okay, you're studying the wrong thing, and it's very complicated. And these things are complex. All of these philosophies and whatnot, they're complex. And you put all of your heart and your energy into it, right? And in the end, you do understand what they're saying. Because you've worked and worked and worked and worked. And so you can lecture on it and you can talk about it. But what are you now? What has come of you? That's this, what would you say? If you were to be honest about your condition after having spent so much time, it's vachaha viglapanam. These words have exhausted me. These words have not made me free. And that's what it is. So don't spend your time there, Jesus. But remember, it's talking to a jignasu. So now somebody comes up with a question.
Aharadi chijan naiva, jive chastran taram chijan, jive chastran taram chijan, kinnaji vasiye naivam, kinnaji vasiye naivam, karo. Karoshitra duragraham, karoshitra duragraham, ahara adi chijan na eva jivet, shastra anantaram chijan kim na jivasi, yena evam karoshi atra duragraham.
It says, hey, somebody asks in the Bhasha, they give an introduction to this verse, the Purva Pancha. Somebody, the student will ask, well, yeah, but, you know, I have to eat, I have to shower, I have to sleep, I have to go shopping, I have to work to make money. There's so many things that I must do just to live, just to survive. Just for my survival, all of these things I have to do. So what's the difference between doing all of these things and whether I study Tarka or Kavya, logic or poetry or whatever I get myself into? What's the difference? I'm still just life itself engages me, and there's nothing I can do about that. So he answers, if you were to give up eating, ahara is eating, Eating, etc. Usually, what they include is eating, bathing, sleeping, the necessities. So, if you give up these life's necessities, so aharadi tyajan, giving up those, he says, na eva jivet, you can't live. If you just decide, I'm not going to eat anymore, You know, I'm not going to take care of the things that I need to support life. I'm not going to do that anymore. Then you'll die. Okay? Okay? But Shastra Anantram Tyajan, giving up another discipline. Shastra means all of those many different disciplines of study. The Vedanta Shastra is one. There's many different, like the Nyaya Shastra, Sankhya Shastra, all kinds of different Shastra, all kinds of different studies, right? Sciences. They said, but giving up another Shastra, some other study, kinna jivasi, does that make you die? Will that kill you? If you don't eat, it'll kill you, right? Well, giving up and studying something else for now, will that kill you? He's always being sarcastic, right? So, will that kill you? He says, so, that being so yena, evam, that being like this, like it, like that, karoshi atra duragraham, why are you being so hard-headed here about this? Why are you being so obstinate, he says, duragraham? Why are you being so difficult? Why is this so difficult for you to understand this? You know, what a question. You know, there's a huge difference between eating, right, and taking care of life support, and deciding to study all different types of disciplines. It's night and day. They have nothing in common. One you have to do or you'll die, and the other is by choice. So why are you being hard-headed like this, he says. So then he brings up another doubt. Let's do the next one. Janaka de katam rajam iti chet dridabodhataha iti chet dridabodhataha tata tavapi chet tarakam tata tavapi chet tarakam patayadva krishin kuru patayadva krishin kuru. He says, now Janaka dehe katam rajam iti chet dridha bodhataha tata tava api chet tarakam pata yadva krishim kuru. He says, if you should ask, iti chet, if you should say, well, how about Janaka and others? Janaka ruled the kingdom, and Janaka was a great king who's in the Upanishads. There are stories about Janaka. He was a great king. He was a Raja Rishi. He was also a great Jnani. So he was a king who ruled his kingdom. Now, he didn't give up ruling his kingdom. At the same time, he had Jnana Nishtha. He was a great Jnani. So now they say, well, what about Janaka? Look at, he kept him, he was so busy. He ruled a whole kingdom. He was so engaged, you know. So how can you be telling me, why can't I do whatever I want to do? You know, why can't I rule a kingdom or study whatever I want to, or from prior examples, you know, work in business or in agriculture? Why can't I get engaged in all things? Look at Janaka, he did it. So he says, if you ask me that, how could Janaka and others rule a kingdom, these jnanis rule a kingdom? He says, why? Why could they? Dridha bodhataha. Because their knowledge was, they had dridha jnanam. They had jnana nishtha. They had absolute clarity in their knowledge. They were clear. So they had no problem. Right? They weren't trying to gain knowledge. If they weren't trying to gain nishtha, they had nishtha. That's why. That's why he could rule a kingdom. And he says, tata tava api chet. And the same goes for you also. Tava api, for you also. It's the same. Exactly the same for you also. Steady tarka. Tarkam pata. Steady tarka. Or do agriculture. If that's how it is for you, if you have nishtha, if you have clarity, then study all the tarka, study all the logic you want. There's no problem. Run a business. Do agriculture. Be free. Free to just live out your prarabdha. Do what is there to be done. Engage yourself in it fully. It will not be a problem. Why? Because your knowledge is there. Right? Once the knowledge is there, it's there. It's not going to go away. Right? The nishcha is there, then you just do what you do. It's not a problem. Study what you study. Engage in what you engage in. No problem. Right? So if the clarity of knowledge is there for you also, these things don't apply. Okay? Now he explains more. Mityatva vasana vasana darajye prarabdha kshaya kankshaya aklishyantaha pravartante swaswa karma anusaratah. He says, Mityatva vasana darajya. It's kind of an absolute locative here, sati anusa. When there is darajya, when there is clarity, firmness, nishta, in that mityatva vasana, vasana means a samskara, means the mityatva in the apparent nature of this creation, the mitya, the dependent nature of this creation, the mityatva vasana, means that samskara is there, that clear, that understanding is there. There is dridha, nishta in that, clarity around that. Means that vas, that seeing, samskara, that inclination, not inclination, but that seeing it in that way, that vasana, the samskara, tendency to see in that way is clear, is dridha. So when that's so, when you understand, when you naturally see the mityatva of the world, then prarabdha kshaya kankshaya aklishyantaha parvartante. Then a person, they engage, such a person, when that clarity is there, they will engage, people like Janaka, they'll engage in their karma aklishyantaha, without suffering. They're aklishyantaha. And not suffering, not hurting, pravartante, they engage. In what? How? Swasva karma anusarataha. In accordance with their karma. Each one in accordance, swasva, each one. Each one in accordance with their karma. They will engage, right? In all kinds of activity. Prarabdha kshaya kankshaya, with a desire to exhaust, just with a desire to exhaust their prarabdha, the karmas that brought them into the world. This is really important. It's really discussing, talking about what is the attitude of a jnani, jnana nishtha. The mityatva of the world is there, right? The freedom of myself, the freedom of myself, and the mityatva of the world, right? That this body, that this atma, is free from the body, mind, sense organs. This is from previous verse. Freedom from the body, mind, sense organs, and jagannitya. The world is apparent. That it is dependent on my being for its reality. That's what we mean by mitya. That understanding is clear for jnani. So, that's inviolate. It's not that yourself ever becomes anything other than Brahman, anything other than what it is. There's nishtha there. The mind abides there. The mind recognizes the mityatva of the world. That's not a question. It's clear. It's jnanam. It's dridha. It's firm. That being so, what do we do? Well, we live out the prarabdha. This life, moment to moment to moment to moment, is my life. This is the life that's being unfolded to me. This is the karma. This is my karma. Right? And my karma is completely, totally here. I don't have to worry about it. Moment after moment after moment after moment, the prarabdha karma is unfolded. And so what am I doing as a jnani? I am engaging fully in that prarabdha karma. I'm exhausting the prarabdha karma. What does it mean to exhaust the prarabdha karma? It means I'm experiencing it. The exhausting the I don't have to do anything to exhaust the prarabdha karma. I'm experiencing it. That's the exhaustion of it. So with what how do I live this life? What is my desire or intent? My intent is to experience the prarabdha karma, to experience the life that's been given to me. And this is the life that's been given to me. And the jnani can do that aklishyantaha, not suffering. Because jagan mitya, atma satyam, brahma satyam, jagan mitya. The confusion isn't there. So my mind isn't asking Ishwara to make the world be such to make me happy. I'm not asking Ishwara to manipulate the world so that it can give some ananda to me. I'm not operating under that delusion anymore. Because any sukha that the world gives, it will turn into dukkha. Any sukha turns into dukkha. Why? Because the sukha, pleasure, turns into pain. Why? Because if it's pleasurable to me and it's bound by time, it will end. That's so simple. If it's pleasurable to me, right, and it comes to an end because it's time bound as everything else, everything is, then I lose something that I want. And then we could go on and on. What about something that's pleasurable to me that is staying and my mind is changing? So this thing that was pleasurable to me is still here. It was pleasurable. It no longer is. I've changed. This is a samsara, right? And so the jnani is, when the nishtha, as a person matures in this knowledge, we don't want that type of engagement with mitya. We don't want to ask Bhagavan or to ask the creation to be in a particular way. The very hint of that the very hint of it coming into the mind, for a jnani to go and pull it back, we're not going to go there. We're not going to go there because it's a fruitless and sorrowful pursuit. And so for somebody who has nishtha, they're not asking Ishwara to be different. Rather, they are engaged in the prarabdha, the very life that they've been given. And that's where the engagement is. And the mind, rooted in the atma, rooted in the self, then experiences Ishwara. That's what it is. Experiences this creation as Ishwara, of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. And we experience it as yajna. As I've talked in the Gita, we experience it as yajna. The whole relationship with the creation is one of for the pleasure of Ishwara, recognition of Ishwara. That's the religious relationship with the creation. So that's the vision of the jnani. And so they engage in the world following in accordance with the prarabdha that is unfolding. And what do they want to do? What do they desire to do? They desire to live the life that is unfolding. That's exactly what it says. Prarabdha kshaya kankshaya. Kankshaya means like with a desire or with an intention. So with an intention for prarabdha kshaya. Exhausting the prarabdha means just experiencing. Experiencing the prarabdha, that is what exhausts it. So experiencing this life that is unfolding, that is the very reason I took this birth. I engage in this life as Ishwara, with that appreciating it as a yajna, appreciating the unfoldment of the karma from Ishwara, and then I engage according to my own my own karmas. And so such a jnani does that engagement aklishyantaha, right, without any sorrow. Right? They're not distraught. Krishantaha means agitated and distraught, and also means, you know, wearied, tired. You get tired and worn out from it all. So, without that. Let's stop there, because we're going to go into a slightly different section. Since we did pretty good today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Taking that. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Is there a clarity of vision and then a clarity of application? Because I can think that I know something and I'll still make a mistake when I put it into play and when I conduct my life, you know. But I still think, I should have remembered that. I should have.
You mean in terms of this knowledge?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's when we bring the knowledge back. And so when I've been doing these transcriptions of Swamiji, a while ago I just did one where he was talking about that. You know, your mind, if your mind kind of gets lost out there, when you realize it, then you pull it back and you see. Right? So say you say, your mind got lost or it behaved in this way, and what was that about? Right?
Yeah.
But the instant you say that, oh, what was I doing? What was that about? Because you got lost out there. Mm. What are you doing? First you're recognizing it, and then you're bringing it back with your knowledge. And so that's just the process. If the mind goes out and gets stuck somewhere, or behaves, like the viparita bhavana, you know? Mm. That's all it is. And if it has to do with vision, then you have to do more manana. Mm. But if it's just dealing with the... You're in the world and there's a kind of a self-forgetfulness. You get sucked into the samsara in one way or another. Then you wake up and you just pull yourself back. And so I think as you go along in this vision, the mind doesn't go out there. It goes out there less and less and less in terms of getting lost in the samsara. Right? And so the having to pull it back becomes less and less and less. But if it's out there, you pull it back. Pull it back means it's just in reference to your knowledge, what you know.
What do you mean by, what's this process of pulling it back? What do you mean by
it
that?
It means bringing your knowledge. It's bringing your knowledge to bear on it. You know? Like, say for instance you know how we can spend a great deal of our life worrying about the future. Mm-hmm. Regretting the past, worrying about the future. Okay. Or worrying about the future, that just becomes very complex words, okay, about the future. How you're going to pull your mind back, it's not just simply don't worry about the future. Because you're worried about the future. Don't worry about the future. It isn't a solution, right? That's a commandment. It's a command, but it's an imperative mood, you know. Do not. But there's something else to understand there. And in light of your knowledge, say, even if you bring your prarabdha karma, what your understanding of prarabdha karma, for me, I've always found this very, very helpful. What is mine is mine. In this life, what is meant for me in this life in terms of the unfoldment of the karma, right? I will have that. And what is not meant for that, for me, I won't have. And the things are part of my karma, I will have that even if somebody else doesn't want me to have it. Because sometimes in life, you run into people who are... you can imagine can really rain on your parade. They can really obstruct. The fear is that they can really obstruct something that you would like to do or something that's really important to you in your life. A person or a situation can obstruct that. You know? We get these type of situations. And then, if that happens, you know, to me what would be useful to think is, what is mine is mine. Nobody can take that away. And what isn't meant for me, I won't get. So say I understand that in light of my vision. That to me is a relief. It brings everything back and gives it its kind of its proper place. And then say, if you understand that in terms of Ishwara, in terms of karma and all that, and you understand that and that's meaningful to you, then what happens? What's the next step? So what that means then is what I make of this life that I have, that the what is mine and what isn't mine, what I make of it all has only really to do with my attitude. In other words, my happiness in reference to this life has to do with how I approach it. You know? I can't make what's not mine happen, and I can't get rid of what is mine. And both can be a problem, depending on my own samskaras or what I think would make me happy. Right? So this type of it's contemplation, it's mananam. You know, it's looking at my situation, and why would I even bother to look at my situation? Because I'm in pain.
Yeah.
Right? If I'm in pain, then this pain becomes my sadhana. Right? The world will cause pain, but why is it causing me pain? That's what I have to... So that becomes the sadhana. That's what I have to work on. And so if I get into a situation like that, I will work on it. I'll think, what is it? It's a good question you can ask yourself, you know, when you're sitting there in pain. You know? What is it? What is it that I really want? What is hurting me about this situation? What is it that I want? You know? And just start really getting into, you know, what is really the cause of pain, what I want, and then all your knowledge and everything will start unraveling. You know? And it's very, very helpful. So, in fact, you can have a whole different attitude toward pain and emotional pain. Because those are the places where your mind is...
sorrowful.
Yeah, where your mind is getting lost in the samsara. Now, there's another thing around that. It's kind of interesting. And that is this, that they talk about this in the Brahma Sutras. I had a good conversation with Sakshat about this when I was doing my Hestamalakya Bhashan. In the Brahma Sutras, there's a discussion about this. The world itself is meant to cause dukkha, right? Say that your very prarabdha will create situations, 50% punya, 50% papa. 50% things that will cause pleasure situationally, it will cause pleasure. 50% situationally will cause pain. It means they're not meant to make you happy. Situation is meant to be uncomfortable for you, right? And so, what that means, as the prarabdha unfolds, there will be situations which are not pleasant, or where you're having to deal, contend with a very difficult person or people or whatever it is, you know, if there's some sort of a rift or whatever the things are that happen to make a situation very hurtful. And let me make this more clear. The situation is hurtful. How you are in that situation will depend, I mean, the way you are in the situation will determine how much you have to suffer in that hurtful situation. Because the situation is hurtful. If anybody looks at it from the outside and they know what's going on, they really know what's going on, they'll say, that's a hurtful situation. That's a difficult situation. You know? So it's not that the situation isn't difficult. What I'm saying is, it's not just that, oh, your attitude is making it difficult. No. Papa. Prarabdha. The situation is hard. But how are you in that situation, the attitude with which you deal with the situation will determine how much emotional suffering you have to engage in the situation, even though it's a difficult situation that is meant to cause suffering. You see what I'm saying? So that's why the discussion in the Brahma Sutras has to do with whether or not for a jnani or for a mumukshu, chanting certain prayers and doing certain rituals, not only do they help for adrishta, usually when we do different prayers and rituals, that's for adrishta karma, for the next life. But can these prayers and rituals help to mitigate some of these papas, these negative situations that you may have to deal with? And so in the Brahma Sutras, they say, yes, this can help mitigate some of those negative situations that come up. Now, just to say a little thing about that. You know, when we do the Shantipathas, many of the Shantipathas that we always say before class, we do Sahanabhava too, but there's many, many more that we do. A lot of times, and even in the Taittiriya Upanishad, the student will go through, please, you know, make sure that I have, may I please have a healthy body, may all my sense organs be in good shape, may I have a peaceful surrounding, may I have plenty of money, may there be a lot of cattle, may I have lots of students, and may they all honor me and be respectful toward me. All of these kind of things, right? All of these kind of things. Praying, please make, what they're praying for is please protect my situation, the situation that I find myself in, so that I don't have to face all of these papas, right? Please mitigate. Please come in and try to smooth out some of these papas. So, now, what I was trying to say that I found helpful is when, can all of us have them, you know, 50-50, get 50 punya, 50 papa, right? When you have the situations like that that come in your life that you know they're hard, you know, you can have an attitude of accepting that. Don't try to say that it's not hard. And you can't say that I shouldn't have that. That's what this loka is all about. I'm going to have that also. And this is one of those. And so I allow that difficult situation to be. And then I can do what I can do to make it better. But I accept the difficult situation, or I accept the difficult person in my life. You know? And that's very challenging, but there's a certain attitude, okay, this is difficult, this is a hellish situation, and this is papa. Sometimes the sannyasis and others will kind of laugh. Hellish situation has finally come to an end, one papa down.
49
to go. Yeah, that one's gone. I've just been released of a big papa. That one's gone. You know? So there's certain understandings and certain attitudes, you know. But I think I've told the story of once in Swamiji's astrology chart, there's a really bad spell. This is a few years ago. Really treacherous spell in the astrology chart. And everybody was worried about it. They were doing so many rituals all over India, all kinds of rituals, ongoing rituals, because they're protecting, you know. And so we were at the... This is right in the middle of this terrible period.
Oh, you mean when he was ill?
No, this was before that. Okay. But that was also there. That was also part of... This is not that story, though.
Okay.
So, we were... It was snowing out at the ashram in Sadersburg. And we were, and it's all very icy, you know. And so we were walking to the lecture hall with Swamiji, and you just watch, he always has two people right by him, you know, to try to help him because it's just dangerous, right? So we were walking along, and he slipped and fell. And he hurt his hip and everything. But everybody felt relieved. We all felt like, maybe that's what it was.
Now we can move on.
Now we can move on. Maybe that's what it was. Because it was a fall. It was a bad fall. But he wasn't really badly hurt. You know, he just bruised himself a little bit. Maybe all of these prayers, maybe all of the chanting, all of this, maybe this terrible, terrible aspect in his chart was mitigated, you know. And actually, that nothing else did happen except that fall at that particular time. So that's the type of attitude. Right?
Yeah.
And you know, in the astrology, there are rituals and pujas and different the deities and different deities of the different planets to be evoked through ritual and prayer and all of these to try to counteract. Some of the negative, the force of the negative karma that's seen in that particular constellation. So there are prayers and rituals that can be done. And in fact, a child will have, as soon as a child is born, they always get their chart done. The astrologer will look and take it forward, you know, to see in that chart, if they do all of the transits and whatever you call it, going forward through the lifetime of the child, they'll see where the rough spots are so that the family will know. You know, this looks like there's some papa, some negative karma here. These rituals should be done to mitigate that, to neutralize. To neutralize it. You know.
Is that using Vedic astrology? How accurate?
You have to have Shraddha in that type of thing, you know.
But is that applicable for us living here in Berkeley? I mean.
No. I mean, it is. I mean, it's applicable all over the world, but. In terms of what we're talking about right now, I'm just talking about prarabdha karma and certain attitudes, that's all. I just kind of tangentially brought that up.
There's a friend of mine who's in Saturn Dasha as well.
Uh-huh.
Shani.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that he said is, thank you, Shani, for only taking a small bite.
Yeah, exactly. Shani is Saturn. Yeah.
This thing about, you know, not getting too distracted by many other things. That one thing that over time I've gotten kind of less fascinated, you know, with politics and the news and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, because it's an endless thing to really stay up on what's really going on and cut through all the BS and try to figure out what's really happening And it's quite difficult and endless in a certain way. I used to be really a news junkie, and now I'm kind of less and less. But there's a little question I have about that, because after all, as a citizen in a democracy, I sort of feel like I have some duty to stay a little bit up on things and make my opinion heard or something like that. So,
I know. Well, I think a lot of us keep up on the news, but that's different than a committed study.
Uh-huh.
If it's a committed study, you know, then that's where your heart is, right? And that's where you're spending all of your time, you know, rotating around in that and reading this and reading that and figuring it out. There's a commitment there. Mm-hmm. And then if there's a commitment there, then that's where your heart is. That's where your emotions are. That's your reality. It becomes the reality that you're living in, you know. And that type of concentrated commitment will take you away from this. Because you're there, right? Your heart is there. And so that's, if you're wanting to gain nishta in this knowledge, then you want to gain nishta in this knowledge. So keep your commitment single-pointed. And then all of these other things that we do them, but the commitment's not there, right? So...
Well, that issue arises for me in the morning. Whether am I going to meditate or listen to Amy? You know, I mean, there's a big clash. I meditate.
No, but it's not so much a question about the day-to-day things that I do in my life, whether I listen to the news and do my email. I mean, I do all of these things. Mm-hmm. But say if you're... Where is your heart? Where do you spend your time? Where's your, you know, what's important to you? And so if you're dividing that up, the knowledge just becomes one of the things you do. And then you're going to get kind of lose your way if it's just one of the things you do. If it's primary, then actually everything that you do is a sadhana. You know, all the different ways you spend your time, all of the things that you do, all are really in the light of your knowledge, right? Because the knowledge is the kind of the placeholder, it's the centerpiece. Hmm. So you have to see. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because, you know, also one of the things is, I think in the past it was more, I felt like it was essential to figure this stuff out because, you know, something bad might happen if I didn't quite sort out which side to be on or something like that, you know what I mean? And now I think, just in terms of my understanding of this, you know, because it is all part of one's prarabdha karma, and ultimately it actually, it's not that it doesn't matter at all, but on some level it doesn't really matter, a lot of this stuff that everyone is all arguing about, and yelling about at the top of their lungs. It's not as important as people tend to think.
That's right. Well, especially if you're, you know, a mumukshu.
Right, exactly.
If you're a mumukshu, this has to be solved. This problem of bondage, you know, of unhappiness, this problem needs to be taken care of. And so that needs to come first, right? And then once that's taken care of, really, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't make any difference because nothing that you're doing is away from that. In fact, if your mind gets pulled out in any way, that's just a sadhana. Like you can't get, once you have that nishta, you can't get pulled out. Then you just do, you live out your life, you know. But if you're getting pulled out all of the time, are you...
You mean not misidentifying yourself or...
No, I was only talking now in terms of commitment.
Okay.
You know?
So that means to me that the clarity is not just a cognitive process, so it has a behavioral aspect to it. There's an involvement of the clarity in your behavior that sort of nullifies your inclination to go against yourself.
To go against yourself, it does. It changes the way you operate in the world is much different. Because you're living, for Jnani, because of your knowledge, you are actually living your life. Not somebody else's life. That's a big thing. And you're living your life in the present. You're engaged in the present. Right? And you see, so the whole way that you see life is totally different, really. And that makes you behave differently. Behave differently really is just attitudinal in a way, right? Because in a way, nobody would think you're behaving differently, and you don't think you're behaving differently either. But in fact, you are in the sense that you are... engaged in the life that actually belongs to you, which is a huge relief. You know, you're living in the present. Your mind has a home. These are big things. That just that your mind has a home base, yourself. That there's a constant self there, and that's where your mind abides. And then from that home base, it experiences the world and experiences the prarabdha. Right? And so...
The clarity is experiential. Like when you said the self is right here, right now.
Yeah.
When you said that.
That's right. Yes. It's totally... It's when you say experiential, it's like you're having a new experience, but you're not having a new experience. You have knowledge which is understanding the experience that you're having differently. And that changes the way you engage with the world, because there's an inner calm. But there's an inner calm, even if you're upset, there's an inner calm, because the self is calm. And the mind has recognized the self. So even if the mind is upset, it's upset in a calm self. Like the calm self is upset. The calm self has an upset mind. But both things are there. The calm self, the whole full self, and whatever the mind is doing. That's huge. For an Ajnani, there is no calm self. There's just the mind. There's a calm mind or an upset mind. Right? But there's not a calm self that has a calm mind or an upset mind. That differentiation is not there. And this world, there's a conscious being in this inert world, and maybe there's a God, maybe there isn't. For a jnani, this world is a manifestation of consciousness. It is manifest knowledge. It's Ishwara. And this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of that. And so I can, with a sense of awe and wonder, you know, kind of enjoy the way this creation unfolds and the way my life unfolds. Because it's something, Ishwara, it's an unfoldment of Ishwara. You have the first-hand experience of Ishwara in reference to your life. See what I mean? Because the whole thing is Ishwara, but you have first-hand, immediate, direct experience of Ishwara and the complexities, the infinite order of Ishwara just in your own circle, which you're the center of. And so you can just notice the infinite complexity and intelligence involved in managing the network that makes your life. It's very complex, you know. I have just thought of, you know, like if you ever go to a football game where on one the team, the fans on one are for one game, for one team are on this side, and the fans for the other team are on this side. And only one team wins. Right? One team wins. And they're both praying. Both teams are praying. But only one gets to win. And the one who gets to win, all of the fans are all so ecstatic and happy. And all the other guys, and the players, they're all moping, you know, and unhappy. Right? So you watch this. Now that's complex. If you look at all of the people involved, all of the karma involved, you know, the prarabdha karma, all of these people coming together to have this huge experience. Half of the people are happy. Half of the people are unhappy. Some people get to be the exalted winners. You know, some guy gets to throw a home run, what do you call it, a touchdown pass. And the other guy catches it. And then another guy fumbles. All these things that happen, all these, you know, it's complicated. But if you look at your whole life, you know, just in terms of the balance of it, just in terms of sukha and dukkha, the happiness and sorrow, and what is good and what is bad for one person and another. It's a complex situation. And if you start objectifying the whole thing and putting your body, mind, sense organs into the complexity, so you have some distance on it, then and just appreciate how is Ishwara going to handle this problem? How will Ishwara handle this situation? You know? then it becomes interesting, especially when it's difficult, when you're in a difficult situation and you don't know what the heck's going to happen. You know, and you can say, how is Ishwara going to work this out? Because it has to work out. You know, you're not just going to disappear, poof, and go away. It will work out. Something will happen. And so you can say, you can be kind of interested. How is Ishwara going to handle this?
Well, that sort of puts a distance of your life from yourself, and you're just sort of observing.
It allows you to recognize that your life and your karma is part of Ishwara. It's not just you in an inert world. You are part of a bigger picture. And then to kind of enjoy that. I love to think like that. To look at life like that.
Like an amusement park ride, huh?
Like Ishwara.
Like Ishwara,
huh? Yeah. Ishwara is like Ishwara. But you know, also if you just think of what it's like to have a lucid dream or a dream. I love the dream example. The whole Mandukya Upanishad deals with the dream so beautifully. Because when you have a dream, you realize, now that's the big picture, and the individuals in that dream don't often appreciate, right, unless they're jnanis, unless they have self-knowledge, they don't appreciate that they are part of something, a big picture, that they are part of a bigger play. And that play has much more powerful than they are. Right? They don't have very much power in that play. They can wiggle around some. But it's a bigger picture. You know? And so, if you understand your life like that, this life is part of a bigger picture that is much more powerful than any individual within it. You know, it's a complex order. Ishwara's order is a complex manifestation. And so to just kind of enjoy that, the complexity, and to know that it is an expression of you, it's not somebody else. Like the yourself, this infinite manifestation is your manifestation, the Atma. Like this isn't somebody else's manifestation. It's not the Jiva's manifestation. The Jiva, the individual, is part of the manifestation. But it's the Atma, it's your core, your being. It's this entire infinite creation is you, not somebody else, you know. And it's infinite intelligence. And so you might as well say now, you know, how am I handling this? Right? But you can't have the Ahankara land on the Upadi then. The Ahankara has to land on the Atma and Brahman, you know. It's not somebody else here.
Wow.
Yeah.
My.
But you know, that's that is the, you know, sitting, that's the chintanam, that chintanam, thinking about this, being with it, using your life as the sadhana for your clarity, especially when things are not easy. That's the best time. When things are easy, then, you know, it's like nididhyasana. When things are easy, nothing's being asked of you, you're just reveling in your knowledge. If you have jnanam, everything's fine, no problem. So it's just Ishwara. Nothing's being asked of you, of your mind. But let some of the difficulties come, and then see, is it just Ishwara? In the same way as when there's no difficulties. Probably not. You probably have to go, okay. And then bring it, let me see this as Ishwara. You know? And you bring yourself back. Until you don't. And until you don't need to. And that's just, and you shouldn't even think, like, say you have jnana nishtha. Don't judge your jnana nishtha about whether or not you have to bring your mind back. You have to bring your mind back. The mind does this and that and the other thing. If the mind comes out, you bring it back. That's nishtha. If you know to bring it out, bring it back, that's nishtha. You know? Otherwise, you're saying, in order for there to be nishtha, my mind needs to be You know? Like it's asking too much.
It's judgmental.
It's asking too much. The nishta is the buddhi. Buddhi has nishta. The manas, the mind, does this and that. Sense organs do this and that. It gets you into trouble. The buddhi says, come home. Yeah. Yeah. Very nice. Okay. Well, let's call it a night.